Good morning and welcome. We will open the meeting with the reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, the first object of the theosophical movement is to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity. This Philadelphia branch is working toward that high and noble goal with a schedule of activities twice weekly. Each Sunday morning at this hour, there is either a panel or a forum. And the subject for the forum for this morning is soul memory, soul knowledge, the memory of past lives. The subject for next Sunday morning is the potentiality and power of genius. Now, these Sunday morning meetings are based on a general theme, and the theme for the month of March is the mysteries of the minds. And following these presentations is always a time for questions and discussion. Now, on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 o'clock, there is a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. The class we're dealing with the after-death state, and the class discuss the first state after death, which was Kamaloka, the place of desires. This coming Wednesday, the class will discuss the second state after death, which is Devakan, or the heaven world. And this will be discussed from the viewpoint of, is communication possible? Now, this lodge maintains a reference library, which is open each Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30, closing shortly before the evening's class. This library carries a straight line of theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines, all comprising the original writings of the founders of the theosophical movement. There are also other texts available, and if one is interested, I suggest you contact the student library. In the library also, you will find a reference in connection with the evening's class. Also, you'll find the same literature that you can read for free in the library on display at the book table just outside of this meeting room. And it can be purchased either during the library hours or before or after our weekly meetings. Now, on Wednesday, March 19th, there will be a special meeting commemorating the life and work of William Q. Judge. This is a special meeting, and we respectfully request that all those who plan to attend this meeting will arrive 5 to 10 minutes before the hour, be quietly seated in order to set the tone for this spiritual meeting. Now, all activities of this lodge are free. The lodge is sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, of service, and money, and all are most welcome to participate, but no obligations are imposed or implied.
I guess we all earned the right to be here this morning on this memory class, since we remembered to fix our clocks. We'll see who and how many show up when the hour is up. It usually happens every year. This, of course, is a huge subject, and huge subjects need to be taken little bits at a time. So we thought we would introduce our speaker with these words from Wordsworth. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its setting, and cometh from afar. Not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come. And we will have a short talk, and then the meeting is open for questions and discussion.
Your attendance this morning obviously indicates that you have an interest in reincarnation and your past lives. You are probably full of questions like, where did I live before? Who was I? Was I rich or poor? Was I good or evil? And these are just a few of the questions that may immediately come to your mind. I'm sure there are hundreds waiting in the wings. But the real question underlying all of these questions is, why can't I remember anything of my past lives? All these questions must inevitably lead us to the somewhat intricate subject of memory. But when you think of memory, know that it is just the generic name for the innate power within us thinking beings of reproducing past impressions. And how is this done? By an association of ideas, suggestions by objective things, or by some action on our 5 external senses. Memory is a faculty depending entirely on the normal functioning of our physical brain. Taking a closer look, there are 3 accepted forms of memory: remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. And there are indeed differences between them all. In remembrance, we can get the idea, but not all the particulars that have brought about some feeling, event, or circumstance of the past. In recollection, we can collect back from one point all the other points connected with it. But there is a third function of the memory, known as reminiscence, which is not at all dependent on the brain. It is brought into function oftentimes not by any present object or occurrence arousing attention in that direction, but springs directly from the soul itself, that comes from something beyond the brain serving merely as a sort of filter or interceptor or translator of impressions. It is a direct perception of what was, otherwise known as soul wisdom. Very few events are impressed upon us or are immediately translatable through the brain by way of remembrance. Even if we so desired and tried until our brain hurt, we could never make a complete history of all those impressions through the faculty of recollection. Yet there is the inherent faculty of recalling, recollecting, and reassembling in such a way as to have a consecutive or synthetic grasp of all those impressions through remembrance. That faculty of memory which applies to the soul, a fascinating innate quality of the soul. This type of memory is called true memory, and it is indeed possible for every living being to achieve. On the physical plane, the action of true memory is seen in all those stages which the human goes through from conception to birth. In every act of our existence, we are exhibiting true memory, whether we realize it or not. The memory of walking is with us now. The memory of talking is with us now. We may not remember how nor when we learned to talk or to walk, but we have present within us the knowing of how to walk and talk. True memory is just that, the possession of the knowledge of the past, not only on the physical plane, however. Dreams attest that we are alive and active on inner planes, for in them we think, smell, taste, hear, and move as individuals, and never have any question as to our identity, even though the personality presented should be of that of a past incarnation. The dreaming state is very close to the point of waking, the intermediate state between waking and sleep, so that we are able to impress the brain cells with what has occurred before waking and remembering. But beyond the dreaming stage, which is a short stage of sleep, there is a vast extent of human thought and action. We go in and in until we are close to the source of our own being, where the thinker is at work, where he knows all that he has been through, all his past incarnations, where he sees and knows himself as he is. The memory of all the experiences through which he has been as an individualized being is there in one consecutive whole. True memory is the paradise which all human beings should strive to regain, to recover that whole memory, to make the great knowledge of the past usable, here and now, in the brain and in the body, is the true work of salvation. The barrier for every man is not the memory, but in the false ideas of life according to which he acts. However much the soul remembers, if we are using the brain contrary to the nature of the soul, the brain will not and cannot translate its impressions. The thinker must transfer the memory of the soul to the brain, and he can do so only by thinking and acting along right lines during active waking consciousness until the brain responds to those ideas and learns to transmit what occurs while the body is inoperative. Then the true memory of the past that is in the soul will become our knowledge in the brain. We must not forget, however, that that a time will eventually come when each of us will be able clearly to recollect all the events of our past lives. The register of everything that has ever happened to an individual is imprinted imperishably upon the deathless, divine side of his nature. But we have not yet developed the spiritual faculties that would enable us to read the mystic record. Nor shall we develop them so long as we constantly identify ourselves only with the life of the brain and the personality. For now self-interest shuts us in. Passions hold us in selfish blindness. Prejudice weaves its dense web over intuition and creative power. And so we languish in our narrow prisons of personality. Only occasionally, when the sunshine of divine love or the spirit of self-sacrifice inspires us, do we catch a gleam of the dawn without our prison walls. Man must use his spiritual will to realize his essential godlike godhood and break through the bonds of selfishness and ignorance into the reality lying just beyond the threshold of his everyday consciousness. Once again, subject for this morning, soul wisdom, the memory of past lives.
We have a question for all of you. Maybe one answer from each of you. What good would it do you if you remembered a past life? Yes.
We have a lot to talk about at a party.
We'd become a great conversation piece, yes. No one else? Yes.
Well, it won't really do anything for our working out our karma or anything. It doesn't matter whether we know what happened, what caused the current karma.
That's true.
We just have to work with it.
And behind you? Yes.
You might better understand the idea of karma and appreciate it.
It is so simple. If every human being had an honest glimpse or a glimmer, I have lived before, the most immediate reaction is, well, then what could I be afraid of? I have lived before and I'm here now. What could I be afraid of? And why am I putting all my focus on this since it's temporary and I've been other thises? Well, how dumb. I'm wasting all of my time and all of my talent. Yes?
And also, we will live again.
Exactly. Ergo,
yeah.
I am not this body, this brain, this personality. But now let's reverse it. What is the drawback in being able to remember a past life? Yes.
Always good and there's always bad.
Yes, that's true. But what is the bad side of that? Yes.
Well, we have more temptation to lose the present.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rather than focusing in this moment.
Especially if we think we were Cleopatra. in the back, the very back.
Yes. If you could remember, you would know then. And you got some bad things coming for you.
Yes, that's true. There's the fear of the future that it builds in. Yes.
Well, if a person in this life is very materialistic, but of humble means, and maybe angry about that, and he knew that he was wealthy in a past life, then he may identify with that instead of this,
and ignore.
Exactly. Be identifying with it anyway,
right.
But it just take him out of reality. He's not going to be able to learn and grow the way he's expected to, given these that he could in these conditions.
And we think that really covers it. You are either afraid of what's going to come, or you are jealous of what you had. We don't know how many of you are familiar with the Broadway musical On a Clear Day. The premise is hysterical. A wealthy, wealthy man wants to find out who he will be in his next life so he can leave his fortune to that child. Very reasonable, very intelligent. And the songs in that show are funnier and funnier. And there's one that a young lady sings after she realizes how advanced she was in a past life and how totally absent all of that is in her present life. And she sings, "What did I have that I don't have? What did I have that I lost track of?" So there's that kind of realization. So perhaps we're better off not remembering. What are we as students supposed to remember from past lives? Who, what, where, when? What are we supposed to remember? Yes.
What knowledge we have gained.
Ah, yes. Now, let's go into that for a moment. If you want to learn to play the piano, you have to study with someone, and you have to apply yourself and practice, and you develop some skill. The more you work at it, the better you get at it. You're not going to be a concert pianist, but you have made the effort, and you can now play the piano. Well, what about the fact that you can do math so easily, or you can speak French so easily? You never put any real effort in. What does that tell you? If you really stop and think about it, if I work to get anything I want in this life, and it's my effort that gives the results, then what about all these things that I don't work at, that I have the skill and the talent for? Where did that come from? That's past knowledge, past effort, past work. So if we begin to realize that, then we realize that we are walking tablets of memory. We don't express all that we know from the past. Why? Why are things blocked from us? Yes?
Well, we're checked by karma. The conditions don't always let everything shine through.
But why would that be? Why would karma be necessary? Why would that happen? In other words, what does life want of us and from us? What is karma? Yes.
We could say that life wants from us the effort in directions where we haven't yet developed.
Exactly.
And so perhaps in certain lives, even though we may have
great
talents
mm-hmm.
that we don't know of, mm-hmm. the reason we don't know of it is because there's other things to balance.
It's because karma is saying, go clean your room. Yes. Get this taken care of first. And then, yes.
Some people seem to think that they're going through some heavy karma right now.
Maybe they are.
So they try to find out, what did I do in the last life to earn this karma now? I want to know because I don't want to make that same mistake again. But that's wrong.
That's a big waste of time.
It's a big waste of time because it doesn't matter what in your last life, what you did in your last life that brought you this karma, because it's the karma you have now, whatever the reason was.
That is the instructor.
You need to work with.
Karma is the teacher. In that the problem that comes to us carries with it all of the things that we need to learn and develop in order to conquer it or satisfy it. So it would be like somebody walking into a room that was a total disaster. Well, let's say it was their office. They walked into their office and it was a total disaster. Should they spend their time trying to figure out how it got that way, go around and ask everybody, did you do it? Did you do it? What happened? Or would it make more sense to apply their energy into turning it back into an order that they could work from? Karma is, a message giver. It says, look, You have failed in this area, and now's your chance. Focus. The more you focus and correct something in you that is a lacking, the more new things come, new talents, new problems. But that's because we're living minds. Yes.
Of course, the other side of that is, you know, to raise one's children with, you know, not just going to school, but also playing sports and introducing them to music and all of these different things, it presents to them where their talents lie.
Yes.
And where their potentials are. And so this life really doesn't have to be, oh, everything's such a struggle because I haven't developed it, but rather taking what you've done before and continuing with it because you are doing the right thing with it.
But, you know, we have known some wonderful things like that, a family making every effort to get a child to realize its potentials and watched that child grow into an amazing baseball pitcher and ready to be hired in the major leagues when he was hit by a car. So even with the best of everything in your life, you can meet setbacks. And what we need to realize is the setback is a setup. It is for you. It is the way you used and thought about life and interacted with life and with people. And it's being brought back to you so you can fix whatever it is. There's a wonderful old story from India of a little boy who was assigned to clean the guru's lodgings. And every time he tried to sweep, and we don't know about you, but we've had broom problems, every time he started to sweep, the broom would do the opposite. He would sweep it away, and it would blow it all back. And he got so angry, he threw the broom. And the guru came out to find out what was wrong. And the child explained. And the guru just shook his head so sadly. He said, you know, in a past life, that broom was a bush. And every day when you got mad at something that wasn't going your way, you came out and kicked that bush. Now that bush is kicking you back. So the child had to learn a completely different way to deal with that broom, almost like an apology. I'm sorry. I will treat you with more respect. Now, we should be that way about our body, about our families, about our flat tires, about everything. Everything comes from within ourselves. Philosophers have said that through the centuries. We meet the world we created by our own thinking. So every problem is an opportunity. Yes.
But what if you're an individual that doesn't have a lot of problems?
Well, that's called a karma coast. Now, remember, if you have a karma that is very blissful and pleasant, that's an earning as well. But it's not a good idea to coast on it. Because the expression is, make hay while the sun shines. You're in a sunshine place. If you just sunbathe, you're not going to get anything out of it. But if you make hay, if you decide, I'm going to use this time, this energy, to do the best I can, to learn, to grow, and to share what I'm learning. So it's wonderful if you have no problems, especially in a day like this, yes.
So then the our karma says that therefore we need to help other people. If we have that kind of life, then there's, what can I possibly do to help? The more people we touch, you know, the more we're fulfilled.
And if we can't touch a great number of people, we can do it in our inner self. We can spend time reading, thinking. You know, Mr. Judge says, if you're the kind of person who sits and glooms, you know, oh, this is terrible, the world is a mess, There's no hope or help for anybody. You are sending that out into space. And those who are feeling along that line, it adds to their feeling and makes them more certain that they're right. They should give up. If, however, you do the opposite, you read uplifting things and you think on a higher plane, there is hope, there is help, there is truth, there is wisdom. That goes out as well. And those who are hungry and searching for it will be touched by it, because we are one. It's not some hope or some dream. It's a reality. We see ourselves as separate individuals, but we're rays of one and the same sunlight, if we could just see that. So we color and affect everyone, whether we meet them or not. It's one human race, and we're all equal parts of it. So the little that you do, even the person who is having a rough life, they can contribute hope and joy just by realizing it. I mean, if a person could realize that their condition, physical, painful, difficult condition, is a chance for them to learn something, maybe compassion. We know we have spent the last 10 years apologizing to every older person we ever, ever thought poorly of. And it was in terms of lipstick. You'd see a lady on the bus and the lipstick would go up into her nose, or her eye makeup was all the way over here. And then you suddenly realize it wasn't because they were stupid or careless. They couldn't see. And you see somebody walking bravely along the street. It may take them a half an hour to go from one corner to another, but they do it. They're twice as brave and strong as you are. They show more will and more unconquerable spirit than you do. So there's ways that we all can, through our own thinking, help life, even if we can't do anything else. But usually we can do something else. Everyone in this room could probably be a writer. Writing, maybe poetry or little essays and sending them off, just to get that light out there in the world. Irresistible. Yes?
But don't people, the expression is, do the best or the most that you can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you have to come to terms with, not someone else.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, like you're saying, like you're giving us an assignment to do this.
Try it.
Yeah. And, but you know, the words are like messengers, and if we treated them like that, we would be more cautious about what we say and how we say it.
What do you mean? People should be warned against perhaps trying writing? We don't understand.
No.
But just thoughts are things, and words are messengers. Yes. You know, the words we really have to censor are the ones that go on in our own mind, that are not expressed, and we're warned that you cannot think strongly about something without someday having it actually occur, either in your dreams or present in your life. So be careful what you think about people. There's an expression, we don't like it, so we never get it correctly, that when you criticize someone else or you hold someone in a critical thought, that in sending that out, it comes back 7 times as hard on you. And we're not talking about very cheery things this morning, are we? Yes.
That whole process of thought, where the thinking or the speaking involves the word I or me, isn't that a point of reference that we need to lift mind off of, so that we're spending more time in the moment thinking about us and we and the
Yes, yes, that's true. We can, though, appreciate the fact that the real meaning of I is the individuality, the thinker. Our problem isn't so much the I as that we identify the I with this me. And as we're studying on Wednesday nights, that whole personal nature is, the best of it is digested, the worst of it becomes like a curse, you carry it with you, and the whole personality is gone. The soul is then free to take up the burden of personal life again, but what will that new life be made of? Where do the elements for the next personality come from? This life, then the life before that, and the life before that, it's like a formula. And things are brought forward in the various elements of our nature. So you can have a perfectly healthy physical body, and a mind that doesn't work too well. Or a sickly body and a great mind. You can have such strange combinations, and they can be altered in the middle of your life. Because one karma gets worked out or finished off, and another one comes up. So we have nothing to be afraid of. How can you be afraid of what you made? You created it. You can uncreate it. Yes?
When you were quoting that story about if you have something in your thoughts and dwell on it, comes back sevenfold. I mean, if that's true of a negative thought, it should also be true of a positive.
I'm glad you brought that up.
If it's true that of a negative thought, that it
brings itself back with something. The expression is something like seven devils worse than it went out with. But it says that a good thought, because it is in harmony, it is part of reality, is hundredfold. So the odds are much, much better. If you elevate your thought, you are truly helping. But the difficult line, and it's back to the personal nature, is if we're doing it because we want to be wise, we want to be smart, we want to be spiritual, then we've tainted it. We should be doing it because we are part of the whole. And the whole is desperately in need of beauty, of love, of wisdom. And we should be doing it for that reason, not for ourselves. Yes?
So then if a person does come across interests, pursuits, talents, and even people that seem like they're picking up where they left off from a previous life, in certain ways could we say that is at the level of soul wisdom, a remembrance of the previous life, even though you may not know the particulars of where.
Oh, absolutely. And it's true of all of us. We have these bushels of possibilities, of memories, and they are soul wisdom. We've brought them with ourselves, and we think the most serious one is conscience. You know not to do something. You know it. No one tells you. It isn't imposed by anyone else. You just know it's wrong, and you don't do it. That's soul memory, soul wisdom. If we would nurture those talents that we see at a glimpse in ourselves, I mean, really make an effort on them, we might be astounded at how far we could go with them. But again, the why is important. Yes?
So then if one finds oneself really attracted to these ideas in particular, then the implication could be that maybe he literally was not maybe part of the theosophical movement, or it could have been before 1875, but just knew the value of these ideas and learning and teaching these ideas in whatever...
In whatever civilization, whatever nation we were in, it is more than likely that we were hungry for truth and that we searched for and tried to find those ideas. Everything is an earning. We're not in these rooms and with these teachings by accident. The second chapter of the Gita notes has a wonderful part on that. And Mr. Judge says, if you are that interested in these ideas, you have probably been initiated in the past, either through the mystery schools, maybe in Egypt, maybe you were a student of the Buddha. But not to be conceited by it, but to realize the obligation it implies. You have wisdom. It's buried under the present ideas you hold, but that wisdom is there. And you have it for a reason, to share it, to use it, to give it out, not to make yourself feel special. Yes?
I think there's reason to believe that some of each of our individual consciousness does continue on beyond the body. And I base that on the fact that some people feel that they've been visited by past family that have crossed over. Now, how would those souls remember who the family was to visit unless there was something?
Well, that's kind of impossible to answer, though, because often we use our own imagination and our own wanting with things. For instance, someone may go to someone who says, you know, I can see your past lives and tell you about them. Well, what's the proof of that? There is no proof. It could be that they're making it up. It could be that they're seeing something that isn't you. The point is not to find anyone from the past or to find anything about a particular life of our own in the past, but to live in this moment as though this moment mattered, because it does, and we don't. We're indifferent to most things unless they affect us. So we have to be aware and awake and not looking backwards. The very people we're attracted to or repulsed by, that's past memory. That's some connection from the past. So you try to do the best with what you can. But it isn't a part of us, according to theosophy, that goes on. It is the all of us. What doesn't go on is this personal nature, which is temporary and a piece of equipment you are using based on your own karma. But the thinker, the mind being, endures through it all. Yes?
We know a number of people who have told me that my father died so many years ago, but he still comes to me, or, you know, anything like that. And I believe that the presence of this loved one is so strong that the person thinks they visit, but it's really imagination.
Well, you know, there's always that possibility that in dreams that we touch the dreaming of the Devakani, of someone who loves us. Remember, HPB says that someone in Devakan, wrapped up in that blissful awareness of all the highest of their own aspirations, can literally prevent bad things from happening to those they love. That tie not only continues, but the soul wrapped up in nothing else and nothing to distract or change its mind, it's nothing but love pouring out on those it cared about. And so one could feel that and then translate it into, I saw that person, or I was with that person. It's all in the way the soul needs to deal with what it recognizes. Yes?
We've heard the term, that's a person shows a lot of ingenuity. And coming to these rooms, we've heard certain terms, look within.
Thou art Buddha.
And never, and earlier we didn't figure that out. But most of us in this room have already read Robinson Crusoe and stories like that. It's staring us right in the face all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But here, look within. Just a few words.
Mm-hmm. Well,
leading you, this, that, mm-hmm. that, telling you to look within yourself.
We always appreciated Mr. Judge's advice in the letters, where he says, if you look within and you don't see anything, it's okay. It's just like a dark glove. You keep looking, you will see it. The light is there for every one of us. We just have to keep at it. But again, it comes to our motive. If our motive is to discover who I was, what I was successful at, well, that's pathetic. When you consider that we are eternal beings, why would you be interested in one petty little thing? We have been almost everything, every one of us. 18 million years of incarnating. The problem is we haven't learned from what we've been through. Yes?
Isn't there much to be learned as well collectively?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we look around at our fellow humans, maybe a nation or a region or a family, and we begin to see commonalities, things we don't like, things we don't trust, things we do like, aren't we also looking at memory of reincarnation in a mass?
Yes, and that is what makes a family and a city and a nation, is that similarity of development, of desire. We are here in this country because not only did we earn it, but we have a responsibility to it. Yes?
Why is it so very important to learn the meaning of humility? In our modern society, even in this room, you have well-educated individuals. Or you may be sitting next to a city councilman, and you don't know whom you're sitting next to. Why is humility so very important? Do we understand the term?
What is humility? Yes.
Well, it's sort of understanding that we are all one. We're all in this together. And what we see is the arrogance of the age, where there's individualism is so prized that
mm-hmm.
one becomes very arrogant and not humble. And
you know, what's an interesting thing to realize, and if you've ever been around anyone who's had any sort of brain damage, you realize, oh my goodness, I'm 2 seconds away from not having any of the things that I think are me. The very fact that we can do the things we do require the instrument. And everyone has the same potential and power. Mentally, physically, psychically, spiritually, there's no difference between our powers. The difference lies in the instrument. So this person has a perfect instrument, and you see all of that talent and genius come through. And this person has a damaged instrument, and they struggle to do the least thing. So humility really isn't even necessary. If it weren't for arrogance, you wouldn't need humility. We're all the same. Big deal. What we admire in someone else, we should go for it. We see someone who's peaceful and calm and compassionate, and we're jumpy and nervy and edgy. We want that? Earn it. Go for it. So humility is a necessity because of the way we have used our personal lives. Yes?
Well, it's interesting that humility and human have a common...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
The words humility and human share a common syllable,
yeah.
A common humus, like dirt.
And dirt should never be humble. Dirt is amazing. We don't appreciate what we have. And that's true of all of us. If you get a cold, if you get a sore throat, if you get a headache, you appreciate health. You didn't before then. So we ought to spend more time in a day appreciating what we do have. Yes?
To give the gift of humility gives us the ability to learn. If we're not humble and we're stifled in that I know everything about that, we're not going to learn, and there's always things to learn. So humility is definitely a good thing.
That's right. It closes the doors completely to assume I already know that. And that's why it is said one of the best things we can do is become a good listener. Even if we think we already know everything the other person's going to say, we listen and we learn from it. Yes?
It would seem also for a person who, you know, we talk about desire and we talk about higher desires, our aspirations to be of greater service, to grow in certain ways so you can help and teach others. Well, without humility, it would seem that a person who actually wants to be of greater service is going to be stopped in his tracks because nobody's going to give him credibility.
Mm.
If he's one to stand on a soapbox and talk about how smart he is, that's more ambition rather than aspiration.
Right. Well, which is really funny because the more you study theosophy, the more you realize how dumb you are, not how smart you are, and you're grateful for what you are able to see and understand. We recall when we first started studying, we were a little angry because obviously these people who were writing these things knew the answers. Why didn't they just give them to us? And it would all be solved and everything would be fine. Because if you follow anyone, you can follow the wrong thing. If, however, you develop your own abilities and powers to reason, to think, to know for yourself, you cannot be fooled. And theosophy makes you do that. It doesn't give you anything except the map. You have to make the journey. You have to build the muscles. Yes?
So the bottom line here is that in all that we do, that we think, we need to be aware that we are part of that whole. And if we are thinking of doing anything that does not serve that, then, well, there will be repercussions. And I don't know whether anybody has ever thought of cheating on something. I mean, I've sometimes been tempted, and then, you know, the thought comes back, well, no, it disturbs the whole. You don't cheat because it will come back to you.
Well, and
it disturbs the whole.
And if we all think back to school, the ones who cheated to get a grade a few years later were desperate for what they should have known.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't do as well on the test as they did, but you retained some of the knowledge and could go forward from there. They couldn't. Cheating cheats yourself, first and foremost. And then it cheats the group, of course.
I'm thinking of, I'm at the grocery store and I've been given the wrong change. Do I keep the extra or do I give it back?
Yeah. Well, there are people who translate karma that way. Oh, this is karma giving me a gift. But karma doesn't need to cheat in order to give you anything. Things will come in a right way. But, you know, the opposite can happen. We recall we had been undercharged a very large amount, like $80 or $90 in a hardware store. And we went back, you know, to tell the man, I owe you this much more. And he got very huffy and took the money from me. And I think he was mad at himself because he was the one who waited on me. But on the way home, I realized I was angry. He should have thanked me. And then stopped dead and realized, oh, really? You should be thanked for being honest. Amazing. You know? Okay, that only works if you thank life every 5 minutes for being honest with you. Our lives are complicated. Our circumstances are complicated. But we have to remember this is a memory play. It was written by ourselves. It's being directed by ourselves. We are acting it out. We see the world we want to see because we colored our own thinking that way. So if we want to improve the world and improve ourselves, we start with our own heart and mind. And it's hard work, yes.
So then if we have this feeling that we've been here before or we've done this before, or this feeling of deja vu, they call it, is that, what is that?
Okay. You've made complications more complex because deja vu, we are told, is a very specific thing. As mind beings, when we go into the deep sleep state, we are one with all of life, and we know we are spiritual beings, and we may even meet with each other. If we're having a problem on this plane, we may meet with each other and try to talk about how to make those personalities mesh and do better. We are one in our purpose on that plane. We see glimpses of the next day because we're spiritual beings. We have the same powers that we attribute to any higher being. We can see the future. If the causes are well set up, we can see it. Then the next day, when the event starts to unfold, we're like, wait, I know exactly what's going to happen. He's going to say, and then she's going to say, and we call it deja vu. Well, it is. Deja vu means already seen. We saw it in the deep sleep state, and now we're seeing it on this plane. But when it comes to memories of past lives, they're not usually so discreet as that. We feel an attraction towards someone, or we feel perhaps a repulsion. We hunger to read a certain book or to see a certain painting. Those can be memories, yes?
Most of us are aware that many times you go to bed with an unsolvable problem on your mind. You wake up the next morning and all of a sudden it's not unsolvable.
Right.
Which is caused by who knows what.
Well, Theosophy says that the masters know and tell us that in that deep sleep state, the soul is able to work things out. You know, there's many, many cases. There's a book in our library, I've forgotten what it's called, The Dream Something. Cases of scientists waking up in the middle of the night and writing down the answer and going back to bed, awakening in the morning thinking, I had the solution, and then finding that it's there written. As a matter of fact, insulin was discovered in that way. And many, many poets and composers have talked about that. It is the mind free from the clogging personal nature. Our difficulty is we have so pickled our brains that we can't bring through this wisdom that we get every night. We don't remember the deep sleep state. We may wake up and remember how peaceful we feel, that everything is all right, even if it doesn't seem to be. But we don't carry the memory forward because we've stopped using our brain in a spiritual way. Yes?
Well, I mean, it seems to me the bottom line of what you're saying is that consciousness is beyond the physical brain.
And the physical brain is the instrument for the mind being. Our consciousness is universal.
So it's beyond.
Does not need a brain.
Right.
And that is the... the impossible thing right now to get through to people. People believe that the mind is the molecules in the brain, and that when the brain goes, the mind goes. And there was that recent brain surgeon who had an out-of-body experience. He was dead for many, many hours. But instead of that convincing the medical community, he has been greatly ridiculed. But that doesn't matter. Sooner or later, they will realize for themselves, we are enduring beings. Nothing can kill us. Nothing. And nothing can kill our past. We carry it with us. We have to alter and adjust it. We're not changing the past. We're changing the conditions within ourselves that created that past. So it can't happen again. But we're not after memory of the past lives in terms of I lived here then, when, and I was this personality. It doesn't matter. We're after the wisdom. Meeting is adjourned.